I want to welcome our first guest in studio, the founder and president of High Street Partners, Larry Harding. Welcome, Larry, to Lear's Portfolio.
Thanks very much, Rebecca. Great to be here.
Now, High Street Partners has an estimated revenue of $10.5 million with 48 employees and is privately owned. You provide a range of cross-border finance and administrative services to companies and institutions with new or existing international operations. So I'm going to sum it up. You help companies expand and get set up abroad.
Exactly. We help them expand and operate overseas. Specifically, we tend to focus on the poor folks at headquarters who have to deal with some of those expansion issues. So if you're talking to the CFO, his controller, his or her controller, the HR director, if they're at a company that's expanding into India, into China, Brazil, anywhere in the European Union, there's just a stack of tasks and issues that tend to land on their desk. Many of them don't necessarily know how to take care of this stuff. They haven't been in a global company before. They're crying and screaming for some help. And so what we do is provide a service, basically allowing them to take the tasks out of their inbox, throw it right over to us, and we take care of that for them.
And do you find that when people come to you, and I would assume you're giving an assessment of a lot of the costs. So not only here's how it works, but here's what it's going to cost you.
Exactly.
Are they surprised at how much it costs or how little?
If they're going to be surprised, they tend to be surprised more at what it's going to cost. A lot of the cost relates to regulations. So especially as they're looking to hire in the EU, for example, the rules and regulations that are in place when you hire somebody there versus hiring somebody here in the U.S. tend to be staggering. So a huge surprise in terms of what you need to pay for employer taxes compared with the U.S., how easy or difficult it is to reduce your workforce if need be. What some of the severance requirements are, what the ongoing rules and regulations, employment contracts, notifications. There are a lot of things to take care of that tend to add up on the cost side.
And so what are the – and along with that, what are common issues that businesses face?
Almost all of the clients we face they repeat to us all the time, I don't know what I don't know, meaning if they're expanding into China, for example – if they haven't done that before, they don't know what the rules and regulations are, what sort of the cultural, the social norms would be during the hiring process. Is it the same or is it different than hiring somebody in the U.S.? So there is just a quite a bit of unknowns that they need to somehow get some feedback on, you know, what's the right way, what's the wrong way to do this stuff. That's definitely a very common theme, is the sort of lack of awareness of how to do it and how to go about it.
What countries can you not get a client set up in and why?
So our mantra is that there's no country that we,
really?
That we can't get you set up in. Our approach tends to be we're a little bit like a general contractor. So we provide a right-hand resource who feels exactly like a trusted colleague to the person at the client headquarters who we're working with. We then in turn have set up a whole science and a sort of a global network of providers bringing in, you know, top-level subject matter experts down to sort of mom-and-pop payroll providers in Korea if that's what they need. So we identify the network of providers, bring them all together, but to the team at headquarters, it's pick up one phone call, give their account manager, you know, a ring, and High Street Partners is taking care of everything for them. What that does is really minimize and eliminate the list of different types of providers and really different things that can go wrong for them.
And I want to talk to you more about this global market and what's going on. You said that you're seeing more optimism in the market, particularly overseas.
Absolutely.
Why?
I think the thing to remember in a bunch of different important locations, so back to China being one of them, they've had a horrendous slowdown in terms of their 12% growth has gone down to 6% growth. So a 6% drop in your growth is obviously huge. But the thing to remember is it's still 6% growth. So there is still – it's a big market to begin with, and it's still growing.
We would be happy with that.
We were delighted. We would absolutely be thrilled. So it's growing extremely robust. So if you have a good or service that has a market in China, you're pretty happy with a 6% growth. Similarly, Japan has been, you know, hitting on hard times. They have an aging population. But they are still the second biggest economy in the world. So, if you have a product or service that resonates in the Japanese market – it's still a great market to be in.
And so you do some education of what markets work for clients.
Definitely.
As well. You probably are saying, I know all the companies are going here. India is a big one now, too.
So India is great. You know, a few years ago, companies were going to India primarily to do the outsourcing of software developers or call centers or things like that. What's happening is they've been successful and they're building up, a good fortune that they're now trying to put to work in terms of building out their own infrastructure, a growing middle class. So India is a market where people are buying, again, the types of goods and services that companies here in the U.S. sell domestically, there's a pretty quickly growing market in India selling to that new middle class, selling to companies who are building out their you know, investments and infrastructure. So,
So what are your predictions for the market coming back here?
I tend to be an optimist anyway, but we have the privilege of really having a front row seat. So we are an entrepreneurial company ourselves, but we also work with 200 other entrepreneurial companies. So, you know, on a weekly basis, we're able to take the pulse of what's going on. You know, there's always different outliers, but in general, things really slowed down in December, maybe through March or April. I think the issue there was none of our clients knew when the ball was going to stop rolling. And until it did, they basically hunkered down and put off making any decisions. Around about the March, April timeframe, it sort of settled down. It's like, okay, this has been catastrophic, but here's where it is. I can adjust to this. I can make decisions and, mm-hmm. and build off of this. So when there became clarity of when it was all going to sort of settle down, the phones began ringing again. People started making decisions. They might have been different ones they would have made 6 months ago, but they started going about their daily work and doing what they do. By and large, our companies, our clients are selling into overseas markets that are generally strong. So they've really come back pretty quickly. I think the reasons for optimism out, especially in the entrepreneurial space, are a little bit underreported and a little underrecognized. You know, companies are going and doing the things that they do. I think things are coming back strong.
Excellent, excellent. We are speaking with the founder and president of High Street Partners, Larry Harding. And High Street Partners was recently ranked number 78 on the Inc. 500 list. So congratulations.
Thank you.
And is that something you were shooting for or just happened as a result of success?
I'd love to attribute it to a wonderful strategic plan. But the reality is when I started doing this in 2003, 2004, first of all, I'm starting off. So I have a low denominator in the Inc. 500 measurement. But we absolutely rode a nice fortuitous wave in terms of, you know, Tom Friedman's The World is Flat, the whole sort of explosion of global expansion into what they call the BRIC countries, Brazil, Russia, India, China. So they're really the timing was perfect to go about doing something like this. So that's been a huge, wonderful driver for us. We started mostly working with venture-backed technology companies because that was my background. One of my technology clients took a job at an Ivy League university in their international business office, asked if we could do the same thing for them. Being an entrepreneur, I said yes and then figured out how to do it. But actually, our service worked equally well for them. And so we're now working with three or four different Ivy League schools, a bunch of other major research universities. So that's been a nice market for us to be in.
Speaking of Ivy League schools, your background, we're both Penn students.
Yes, go Quakers.
Yeah, right? Bachelor of Science in Economics with a dual major in Finance and Accounting from Wharton.
Yep. You know, I'm especially because I have a junior. My oldest is a junior in high school, so he's now looking at colleges. I feel like I've really changed roles, but I can tell him and anybody who ever asks, it's been really interesting to see as my career's unfolded, the foundation that I was able to pick up in my undergrad years at Wharton, the people I met, the perspectives I gained, it actually really does work. And it's really interesting to be able to point back to different, you know, hunches and intuitions, perspectives that I have, and sort of identify, well, I remember in my, you know, finance 1-0 class. How that sort of
were they right? Were they right?
They were generally right.
Okay.
I got to tip my cap.
And what were they? Can you think of something they were wrong about?
Well,
like the global economy
I was
not being
say,
so quick? Or?
One thing you could certainly look at. So I was Wharton in the late 80s or the mid 80s. That was really when sort of, hey, debt can be a powerful leverage and sort of the principles of how debt can work. I can honestly guess that a lot of my classmates, you know, and a few years earlier and later went onto Wall Street and sort of took some of that newer theories at the time and put it to good use for a period of time, maybe a little excess use as it has turned out. But definitely, you know, the principles understanding how leverage works makes mm-hmm. a ton of sense as I've learned and seen how things unfolded. Again, what worked and what hasn't worked lately. So interesting.
And you became a licensed CPA in Massachusetts, and you also served as the VP of International Finance for Ciena Corporation, a global supplier of telecommunications equipment, where you oversaw 20 overseas offices. So it seems to me like what happened was you saw a lot of probably things work or not work.
Definitely. So prior to Ciena, I'd been with the types of companies who are now my clients. As we were expanding overseas, it was extremely frustrating and inefficient trying to do so myself. I was a CFO for a company that was acquired by Ciena. I became their VP of International Finance. really for 4 years, I was able to learn how to support a company like that, build out a global network, and basically answer the questions that I always had back in the day when I needed a service like this. And clearly it was the prompt to really start what we're doing now.
And, okay, so what company is the best to, if you had to pick one, I'm sorry, not company, what country is the best to set up shop in abroad, if you had to pick one?
The most interesting probably now is China. It has a lot of the different elements. So it's a robust, fast-growing market. It's exciting because it's, you know, new and coming on board. It's challenging. The rules are still coming into play. It's somewhat exotic. It's halfway around the world. It's risky if you don't do it right, and IP protection and things like that. So in terms of like a good spy novel, it has all of the elements you'd want to have in a book. It's certainly the most interesting. Hard to say the best. The European Union countries are like another United States, so that's a great market to expand into as well. China's probably the most interesting currently.
What country screws up a company the most?
You know, again, China, but I've talked so much about that. One of the other ones comes to mind is Russia. So Russia is a strong potential market, but has a lot of ups and downs, a lot of challenges to deal with in terms of, you know, governmental regulations, potential for corruption. That is an incredibly challenging country to go into and succeed. You really want to watch your steps there.
And final question, what's your leadership philosophy?
That's been fun to realize. Leadership philosophy has been spot a market need and build a great team of people and get them completely focused on exactly what the bullseye is that we're going after. If it's exciting enough to interest you, it better and probably is exciting enough to interest the people who signed on to join you in that quest, and just spring them loose and let them go.
Excellent. Well, thanks for being with us. We appreciate it.
Thanks. This was fun.
Founder and president of High Street Partners, Larry Harding, number 78 on the Inc. 500 list. And of course, you can find his bio, a link to his company, his full interview, all at leadersportfolio.com. Thanks to these exclusive sponsors of Leaders Portfolio, Dennis Cole Architects, WOW Services Group, Divine Inspiration Salon, Riverwalk, a development featured on the front page of the Wall Street Journal, and Hilton Garden Inn of Fairfax, Virginia, providing all your business meeting room needs. If you're trying to reach the business community directly, consider sponsorship of the Leaders Portfolio. Up next, the rank number 216 on the Inc. 500 list. And not only that, he's a young entrepreneur. That's all next on Leaders Portfolio.
Leaders Portfolio with Rebecca Blacksmith, now playing at leadersportfolio.com.
Be the first to know who won our Leaders Portfolio Awards. Visit leadersportfolio.com and sign up for our mailing list. Be the first to know if your company won the Leadership Business of the Year. Sign up for our mailing list. Host Rebecca Blacksmith speaks to organizations about leadership. Find out where on our mailing list. Learn about guest interviews and leadership advice. Visit leadersportfolio.com and sign up for our mailing list.
The Hilton Garden Inn Fairfax Hotel near I-66 and 50 provides state-of-the-art guest rooms with complimentary high-speed internet access, a full-service restaurant, business meeting and banquet rooms for up to 300 guests with a professional staff that stays focused on the details so you don't have to, and full banquet catering. Call 703-385-7774 for guest rooms, meeting space, or special events at this award-winning hotel. That's 703-385-7774. The Hilton Garden Inn Fairfax.